The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just finished a three-game set against the Kansas City Royals, winning two games out of three. They now stand at 61-52 on the season and currently occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. Coming off a good series win against a team that's ahead of us in the playoffs. Tonight was unfortunate, but still great to take two out of three from them.
Yep, absolutely. Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to?
You guys can find me on Twitter at NDiamondMedia.
Sounds good. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you? And are you staying dry down there?
Yes, staying dry. That storm is, it's not nasty as far as wind, but there's a lot of rain. And I had a crash course in meteorology. And apparently the jet stream is just barely dipping into the United States in the northern part. And so it's not pulling the storm up the coast like would normally happen. So it's just been hovering, and so flooding could be a problem. Luckily, I'm not in a flood zone, so good as far as that. You can find me and all my mischief at CushmanMLB on Twitter, the Bastards account at Bastards_Boston. We're on Instagram. You can find our blog, which we were kind of slacking on this week, but we'll get cranking on that. Just search Bastards Substack for our in-print content.
Very good. Well, as we said off the top, Red Sox do take two out of three from Kansas City. And this, we knew it was an important series. Kansas City was a team you were chasing in the wild card. You wanted to really get that tiebreaker with them as well, which they did. You know, that's going to be important if these two teams have the same record at the end of the year, because there are no game 163s anymore. It's all coming down to the tiebreaker, the head-to-head tiebreaker. So we knew it was an important series. They do take two out of three, but am I the a-hole for sort of saying that loss in game three makes it feel like more of a series loss? That's just how I'm feeling. I don't know about you guys, but like that last loss was really brutal in a lot of ways, because you had the game in hand. You had the game in hand, up 4-2. All you had to do was not screw it up, and they did. And now you've got a day off to kind of lament and think about it before the Astros come in, and they're playing good baseball right now. So I don't know. That's just, it kind of just took all the fun out of it for me, losing that last game. But Nick, I don't know how you feel. That, you know, do you feel the same way, or are you just more excited that they took two out of three and just keep pressing on?
I mean, I would have loved to win, but if you asked me if they were going to touch Cole Reagans at all, absolutely not. I would have said there was no shot they would have won this game. They took the 4-2 lead. I was feeling pretty optimistic, but also Cutter Crawford loves to give up home runs. It's his new favorite thing to do. And he did a lot of that today. And yeah, I would have loved to win this game, but I'm not super, super upset they lost to Cole Reagans and a elite left-handed starter.
Terry, how do you feel?
Well, if I remember right, Charlie definitely picked a sweep for the Royals to win the series. I forget which way Jeremy went. I think he had the Royals winning the series. I did as well. I had the Red Sox winning the Bayo start only. So they did win an extra game more than I expected. But, I mean, it's hard. We're not really going to talk about Cutter Crawford because, you know, where it was a series win, we're going to focus on the positive side as much as our haters have been coming at me for. But Crawford is cooked. I just don't see how many Cutter Crawford games you're going to win going forward. He only went 3 2/3, only one home run given up, but he walked four. Just not sharp. And he's not really throwing strikes. He's not pounding the strike zone like he was. And hitters aren't chasing anymore. And the balls that are in the strike zone are like middle-middle. You know, middle-middle whatever. And he's getting crushed. And I don't... So, am I... I'm not shocked that that we didn't get... But I get what you said. We had no business winning a Cutter Crawford start, or let alone Cole Reagan starting it, who's probably going to... I would imagine he's going to finish in the top five or six in the Cy Young race, but it is what it is. But they did win one more than I thought.
They did, yeah. So we should do what we usually do and give them credit for it, and we will. Because, like as Terry said, despite what everyone on Twitter wants to think, we are actually happy when this team wins, and we do cover the positive side of it when they do win a series. So we won't waste any time. We'll get into our top five players for this series, and I put myself in the leadoff spot here. So I'm going with James Paxton to lead things off. I was positive about this deal when it happened, when the Red Sox picked him up, because he was basically out there for free. Now, you didn't get him for free. You had to give up his 17-year-old, you know, DSL minor leaguer to get him. But as I said at the time when we talked about the trade, I don't think you're going to hear from that kid ever again. So most likely, I mean, you know, if we do, then we'll revisit that way down the road. But for now, it was a smart move because you needed an extra starter and you didn't have to give up much. And I said at the time, James Paxton just wins you one, maybe two games here down the stretch, it was worth it. And he wins you this one. So big start for him, you know. And again, this was a series that was important. You're going into a game one. You've got Paxton going up against one of the best pitchers in the American League on the other side, you know, going up against Brady Singer. So for him to go into that matchup not favored and to give you six innings, only allow two runs, struck out four, you know, nothing like overwhelming, but he gave you six innings of quality baseball. He gave you a quality start. You know, I don't think anyone was really expecting James Paxton to have many quality starts left in him, given the year he was having with LA before we picked him up. So the fact that he wins you game one kind of sets the tone, and it shows you that I put the Paxton move along the same lines as like the Dom Smith move. It's not overwhelming, but it was enough to get you over the hump. You know, it was a small move that was enough to get you an extra win here against an important team that you have to beat in an important series. So all in all, it was great. Now, his next start, he might get blown up. Who knows? But at least for this week against the Royals, he did his job, and that was very clutch. Nick, what did you think about Paxton's outing?
I think Paxton pitched pretty decent. You know, he's not going to overpower hitters anymore. I mean, he did his job. He did well enough. I know one of his earned runs was basically an error he made himself. He kind of ran over that ball, couldn't pick it up cleanly. So if you really want to look at it, it was only one earned run, but it was his own error. So another thing I kind of wanted to point out, I wanted him out after the fifth inning. I know the sixth inning was probably his most efficient inning of the night, but it was just scary seeing him face the order for a third time, having to see Bobby Witt Jr. again, having to see Salvador Perez again. It's just those guys can leave the park at any time, and I don't want to see a lefty throwing 92 facing those two hitters a third time through the order. It worked out, but it's just the thought that I don't think it can keep working out if you keep putting him out there against elite hitters three times through the order. So he did his job, but I'm still want to be cautious with him because I can't trust him fully.
Terry.
Well, it bit Crawford today to let him face Bobby Witt again, and they had Bernardino in the pen warming up. I thought for sure there's no way Crawford's facing Witt. So that was an example where we did get burnt. Nick's example, you know, we skated with Paxton. I thought Paxton was going to get tuned up pretty good in this start. He was facing a previously a Seattle lineup that struggled mightily against lefties, the worst team in MLB against lefties. So he cruised through the six innings for the most part. I'm still largely pessimistic, if I'm being completely honest. We'll see how he does on Sunday against the Astros. If he gets through that one, then I'll probably back off quite a bit. But had Paxton, you know, put up a 4 or 5 spot there, the narrative right now on this series, the deadline moves, would be a lot different. So, is what it is. Surprisingly, he had the best start of anyone in that series. That wasn't on my bingo card. I thought Bayo was going to have the best start coming off of a string of decent starts for him, and where the bar has been. But Bayo fell, well, I shouldn't say he fell apart, but, you know, unraveled a little bit in the fifth inning there and couldn't finish it. But Paxton, again, your best pitcher in the series.
Yeah, certainly best starting pitcher in the series. I agree with you about Bayo. He just kind of ran out of steam and unraveled there. So Paxton, meanwhile, was able to go out there and give you a clean six innings. So very important. Sticking with the pitching, we'll move to number four on our top five. So, Nick, who do we got coming in there?
So I got Kenley Jansen here. He only pitched once in the series. It was a crucial four-out save. Cora brought him in the eighth. He got the job done. He finished the game off against Bobby Witt Jr. Always a scary at-bat. I think probably the second best player in baseball right now behind Aaron Judge. He had 3 Ks in that outing. And, you know, it was a game we had to win. We won game two. We stole that game. And I was happy with his outing. And I think he's been pretty nails lately besides that one blown save about a week and a half ago now. So good for him. And hopefully he keeps pitching. You know, would have been nice to get him in a save situation today, but we blew that lead long before that. But yeah.
Terry.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see him getting warmed up there for the eighth inning, but because you just don't see that a lot for him. You would think for a guy who's going to be 37 years old, wear and tear, you're just kind of going to manage him a little bit more carefully. But the dude's been solid, and I've got his game logs up right now. I mean, I guess he did get tagged a little bit in July, but still, you know, a 295 earned run average on the season, doing his job, you know, closing out games. And one thing that we haven't really seen that hasn't really dogged him is, you know, he hasn't been allowing guys on base for the most part. And when they are, with that slow delivery, you know, early in the season, he was really struggling with that, and he would have to adjust his delivery. But when you see him warming up, you feel pretty good that he's going to finish it out. And that's exactly what he did with this Royals team. And that was a one run lead he had to hold over those four outs. So good appearance for Jansen.
Yeah, that was a very clutch save. And the fact that he was able to get a four-out save from a guy who hadn't pitched in a week, you know, that's pretty impressive. Some guys would come out, you know, cold, maybe not have their best stuff. Jansen was ready to go. And what I really like that I'm seeing from him is there seems to be an extra sort of, like, pep in his step when he's out there. Like, he's looks a little more like he's got a little more swagger when he's getting the final out, when he's punching someone out. So I think he's in good spirits, because that's a guy you worry about with trade deadlines and with, you know, him still being here. You know, is he happy with the direction of the team? Is he going to be, you know, a positive influence in the clubhouse? Because I think at times he hasn't been. I think at times when he's unhappy with the front office, he, you know, he kind of gets a little mopey, starts calling people out, whatever. And I think it affects him on the mound too. Clearly, I think he's pretty satisfied. He looks like he's in a good groove right now. The whole team is. I mean, again, they keep winning series and they keep getting closer and closer to that wild card spot and, you know, being in the playoffs. So I think he's in good spirits. That's important because you don't want him going sour. Now, you know, if they get swept by Houston this weekend, you know, we'll see, right? With Kenley, you never know. But at least for now, it looks like he's at the top of his game, and it looks like that he's ready to really help this team get to the playoffs. So that's important.
Fun fact about Kenley, he's a switch hitter, according to Baseball Reference.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It says he bats both.
It's pretty impressive, actually. Yeah. Nick, you're on mute.
If you saw in today's game when Danny Jansen got his first at bat in the scoreboard bug, they put Kenley Jansen and his career batting average was like 200. So he somehow got a hit somewhere.
Okay.
Nice. Oh, he's a pretty good athlete, I guess, which wouldn't have guessed.
I mean, he was a catcher like when he was in the minors, remember, like with the Netherlands and the World Baseball Classic. So he guessed he could have hit, but as a closer, you don't get many at bats.
No, yeah, that's certainly true. So yeah, he's had some rare opportunities there.
Is Kenley going to Cooperstown? Most likely, right?
I think he's
I would say it. So. He's going to end his career with probably the fourth or fifth most saves. It's him or Craig Kimbrell, and I think they both are going to be Hall of Famers.
That's right. Yeah, he was catch, and he's going to catch one more person, most likely, right?
Yes, it's basically Rivera, Hoffman are off limits. I don't know if he passed K-Rod yet, but yeah, I think he did. I don't even know. I don't think K-Rod is anywhere close to them now. I think he was at like low 400s, and I think they're mid 400s now.
Yeah, 441. That was actually a dumb question on me. But yeah. So he's got at least one or two more years left. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I don't think the Red Sox are going to back up the Brinks truck for a closer like that. They never really had before him. Kimbrel made a lot in his late arbitration years, but they never really made a huge commitment to a closer. But he's had his bags packed all season, you know, all winter. Thought he was getting traded, and I guess by probably July 1st he probably figured he was here to stay, but you never know. They were taking calls on him though, so who knows.
Oh yeah, of course they were. Yeah, but I'm kind of glad that he's still here, you know, as much as I was at the time saying, yeah, he's a goner, just get, you know, get the most you can out of him. That save the other night proves that, like, still good to have a legit closer around, because some of those other guys in that bullpen, I don't know if they could have pulled off what he pulled off in game two. So definitely an important outing from him. Sticking with that bullpen, and sort of a little bit of a shocking guy to be on here, but I think it's worth mentioning, Terry, who comes in at number three?
So I'm going with Cam Boozer, but only because I wanted to bitch about Breslow. And Boozer was fine throughout the series. There wasn't a lot of offensive, like, one guy crushed it, and we'll get to him in a bit, but nobody else had more than three hits, let's say. Or actually, well, we're going to get to two guys. But anyway, it was kind of stunning to me when they activated Chris Martin today, that Boozer, of all people, was the one who got sent down. And I don't know if I said it in the war room or if it was with a friend privately, but I was like, they probably should have sent down Bernardino. And Bernardino, I don't have his numbers up, but he hasn't been electric like he had been, you know, much of the first half of the season and basically since we acquired him last year. And, you know, he's been hit around a little bit, and we kind of paid for it there in I think it was the fourth inning. So, you know, he gave up a dinger, and, you know, it just, things really unraveled there even worse once Crawford was taken out of the game. And who else is better in the bullpen right now for lefties? So
it's Boozer, Bernardino in terms of the lefty lefty matchup. So,
yeah. So I would have kept him, and he's valuable. I mean, he was a starter prior to his call up. Like, he was starting games in Worcester this year. So he could easily be a multi inning, you know, appearance out of the pen. So I was a little surprised that was the move.
Nick.
So I think as of right now, Cam Boozer is a better left-handed option over Brennan Bernardino. But I don't agree that I would have sent down Bernardino. I would have sent down someone else, maybe Winkowski, who pitched today. My initial thought was Cooper Criswell, but basically seconds later, it came out that Nick Pivetta is going to miss his next start. So that wasn't an option anymore because he's probably 99% chance going to take his place. So it was basically either Bernardino or Boozer. And I think they kind of, they just made the decision and sent Boozer down because, he's had less tenure in the major leagues. But right now you have to pick the better player, and Boozer is the better pitcher. Bernardino's been giving up these home runs, giving up runs. He was nails early in the year. I have to give him props for that. But right now he's going through it, and hopefully he figures it out. But I'd rather have Boozer up in the major leagues.
So Cam Boozer in the month of July has made 8 appearances, has an ERA of 1.23. Brennan Bernardino in the month of July has made 9 appearances, has an ERA of 11.23. So he has been hot garbage for pretty much the whole month of July. And I know we're into August now, but it's really not much better in August so far. He's got an ERA close to 4. And again, this is, probably not updated, so it probably went up after this last game. Boozer's just been the better pitcher. Now, I agree with what Nick's saying. I wouldn't have sent Bernardino down because you do like to have two lefties in that bullpen. I would have maybe sent Winkowski down. I know he was okay in that last game, but the problem is if Bernardino and Boozer are both up, Cora's going to pick Bernardino every time because he's been Cora's guy since he got there. So I think Cora still has a little bit of trust issues with Cam Boozer, despite the fact that he's been pretty good. So it's tough because you want Bernardino to get back on track, because when he is really good, he's filthy. And we saw that at the beginning of the year. He can be shut down in that role. It's just lately, I don't know what's been going on, whether it's a mechanics thing or, maybe he's just starting to lose his command, which has been kind of been infectious around that pitching staff lately. But yeah, another rough outing for Bernardino, and Cam Boozer, unfortunately, gets the rough end of the stick, gets sent down. I don't think it'll last too long. I'm hoping he's back up pretty soon, but yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that a guy like that, gets sent down, and then, game 3 happens, Bernardino gives up that go-ahead bomb to Pasquantino. So rough sequence of events there, but, Cam Boozer, we'll see him again for sure, at least certainly for the September run, because you'll need him against lefties going forward. So with that, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to point out, illustrated how dominant he was in the month of July, but going back to from June 6th forward, he's only given up 2 earned runs, and one of them was in this series. So that was a Chris Martin-like run there, and I mean, his earned run average is well under 3. I think it's like 274, something like that. And he doesn't walk a ton of guys either. Like, why wouldn't you want Cam Boozer on your, on your roster? A 2.3 walk per 9. That's pretty low. So it's a bit of a head scratcher, and I know we got Martin back, and he struck out the side tonight. It was very low leverage, albeit, but I think your bullpen's a lot more stable with Boozer in it.
I agree. Yeah. And again, his last 10 outings hasn't given up a home run either. So, and that's something that this pitching staff mightily struggles with. So that's a strength of Boozer's for sure. So with that, we'll move over to the offensive side of the ball, coming in at number 2 on our top 5. Nick, who do we got?
You're on mute, bud.
So I have Romy Gonzalez here. He only had 2 hits in this series, but they were 2 huge hits. The 2-run home run in the first game where he hit the ball 452 feet into the fountains out there in Kauffman Stadium. That was a pinch hit bomb, and he played first base that game. He also played the third game tonight and hit another 2-run home run over 400 feet, or a 3-run home run tonight that actually put the Red Sox ahead at the time. and he played second base tonight. So he's a versatile player, a guy Breslow picked up for basically nothing. He should be probably playing shortstop for the White Sox right now if they didn't give him away for free. So that was a good pickup, very good depth piece. Can play multiple positions, decent runner. Romy Gonzalez is a decent player to have on this team, but realistically, is he a guy that you want to play every day? Absolutely not. But he's doing his job, and you can't really complain about him.
Terry.
Over the last month, I mean, he's hitting 286 with a, you know, a 333 on base. And the dude is, he's got serious power. I mean, if he was an everyday player, I'm not sure that he could be. But if he was, I mean, he'd be a 15 to 20 home run a year guy. And he's interesting. Like when he comes up, I'm always locked in on him. I'm like, what's he gonna do? You know, because you know, he had that bomb in game one, and then today, I mean, it was looking like the game could get away from Reagan's after that three run shot. So I mean, he's been a bit of a difference maker, and I mean, I'd like to see him get more starts at second base, I guess. I mean, who else is going to contribute as much at that position right now? You have to have Hamilton in there, I guess, against righties, but, you know, because he can help you so many different ways. But I don't know. He's been interesting. He has exceeded my expectations. I mean, when we first acquired him, I think he hurt his thumb right away, first game, and then we didn't have him for a while. And then he came back, and then he might have had like a hamstring problem or something, and then right back on the injured list. And I'm like, this is why Chicago gave him away for free, basically. But ever since he's come back, he's been solid, and this is very much a next man up lineup. You know, I mean, Jaron Duran had a quiet series, but you had Romy stepping up and helping out, and tomorrow it could be Sogard or Ref Snyder. It's just the way this offense is built.
Yeah, he's another example of a guy, you know, you give him a change of scenery, it can do a lot. You finally get him out of the hellscape that is Chicago, and you bring him to Boston where he's actually playing for a contending team. He's getting regular at bats and, you know, at the major league level. And he's producing. He always had a little bit of pop in the minors. When you go back and look at his numbers, like there was one year not too long ago, 2021, he had 24 homers in Chicago's minor league system between AA and AAA. And he was hitting like 284. You know, that's when he was 24 years old. So I don't know what the White Sox are doing at that time where they just didn't want to call him up. But he was kind of like their Bobby Dalbec, you know, down in the minors. He was just mashing homers, but they never called him up, never really gave him a shot at the big league level. And then the few times they did, he, you know, had a couple of hits, a couple of homers, and they'd send him right back down. So I think now he's in a position where he's a lot more comfortable because he's still a utility guy. He's not an everyday player. Like Nick said, I don't want him playing every day because it sort of reminds me of when they tried to play Brock Holt every day. Back in the day, and he got exposed. You know, it just pitchers figured him out and, you know, figured out that he's a 4A player, and that was that. But I think Romy's maybe even a little bit better than Brock Holt was. He's certainly an upgrade over Pablo Reyes, who they had early in the season. And, you know, I know we all love Pablo for his personality and he had a couple of clutch hits, but at the end of the day, he was not very valuable. He started to get exposed as well. So Romy is such an upgrade in terms of that right-handed utility guy off the bench. Like Cora obviously trusts him in big spots and he's come through for him. So he's a good player to have. This is the kind of guy that he's going to win you important games down the stretch. And you don't really necessarily think of that, but you know, in a series like this where, you know, we had other guys going off, but you know, Devers was a little quiet. Duran was okay, but a little quiet. O'Neill was sick. So in a series like this, you need a guy like Romy to come off the bench and give you those big hits. And he did exactly that. So hopefully he's not like an O'Neill type where the injury bug keeps getting to him, you know, as Terry kind of laid out there. But as long as he's healthy and he's, you know, still producing, I say try to find him at bats off the bench if you can, because he obviously produces every time he gets in there.
So just kind of diving into the numbers a little more, because we don't really talk about him on this podcast all that much. I mean, we have a little, but his OPS, 70 points above league average at 790. His OPS plus 115. League average is 100. So those are kind of significant. Another stat I like, only a 21.6 percent strikeout rate. That's pretty good. You know, if you're down close to 20, you're not striking out very much. If you're below 20, your plate discipline is probably elite. But where he really does shine here is against lefties. He's hitting .303 against lefties with a .373 on base. And his OPS is .904. Not off the charts, but very good. Very good against lefties. All four of his home runs, because he hit it off of Reagan. So all four of his home runs have been against lefties. So his numbers against righties, from a power standpoint, not great, but he is hitting at a 250 clip. So, I mean, not terrible. Like, he's not lost at the plate or anything. But that's a pretty good platoon, really. Him and Hamilton, righties versus lefties.
I mean, if you think about it, that's how they first found Rob Refsnyder. They were looking for a guy who mashed lefties, and they went out and got him. And he was, you know, he had bounced around a couple of different teams by that point. I think even he spent a year outside of MLB, maybe playing back overseas or something. But the Red Sox picked him up. No one else was really had him on their radar. And Rob Refsnyder has become one of your most valuable players off the bench. So if that's what Romy turns into, if he turns into another Rob Refsnyder that you discovered that other teams weren't going after, that's huge. So, you know, I'll take it. Even if the numbers against righties aren't as impressive, he still is contributing a lot. And this team struggles against left-handed pitching. So if he finds his way into the lineup against lefties and he continues to mash them, that's perfect. Because, again, you picked him up for free, basically. So you'll take that any day.
Couple of things real quick. So Romy is under control through the 2028 season. Now, when you look at all these kids we have in the pipeline, as Jason says, you know, 20 middle infielders or whatever your number was. We got one less now because we got rid of Nick York for Quinn Priester for some reason. But, you know, Romy is a guy you can keep around if you want to. Now, let me ask you guys this, since you brought him up. Rob Refsnyder is a free agent at the end of the year. He's making $1.5 million this year, so pennies. I mean, it was almost an insult to even give him that. But the upside to him was he's definitely going to make the team, and this was the first year where he went into camp with a guaranteed deal. But, you know, he's got a 1.1 war, and, you know, I think that's significant for a fourth outfielder. And he's still hitting just above .300, an OPS .886. Granted, he's getting most of his starts against lefties, and he's a lefty killer. But I don't think he's going to, regardless if it's us or someone else, I don't think he's going to be making as little as $1.5 million next year. I think he's going to be upwards of probably $5 million or so. Do we think the Red Sox do it?
Nick, I'll let you go ahead.
I would definitely welcome to have him back. Yeah. In the fourth outfield capacity, he's not going to start over Willie or Abreu, Jaron Duran or Rafaela, most likely, most games at least. But he's a great guy to have on your team. If someone goes down, he can step in a lot, even hit righties this year, which he hasn't really done in the past. So I would definitely welcome him back. I probably wouldn't give him more than 5, 6, 7 mil, probably be max, maybe 1 year, 2 year, maybe 1 year and an option or something. But I think somebody will give him a contract, maybe 2 years, $15 million. I'm not 100% sure what like Mitch Garver got off the top of my head, but they're kind of comparable players. I think it was like 2 years, 20, maybe. So he might get like 2 years, 18, who knows? So I think he'd cost a little bit more than $5 million, but I would definitely welcome him back.
I think they'll give him 2 years with an option because I think he's here as long as Cora's here. I think that that relationship is going to keep him in Boston at maybe a lower price than he could get out on the open market. And he might get some really tempting offers, but I think he'll stay for – he will get a pay bump for sure, but I think he'll get 2 years with an option. I don't know what the money will be, $7, $8 million a year, something like that. But I think the Red Sox will keep him. Again, I think he's here as long as Cora's here.
I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I like him, so if we keep him, that's fine. But just kind of looking towards next year, you're getting Story back, and you might even this year, actually. If Story comes back, most likely that's it for Rafaela in the infield, I would think, for the most part anyway. So that's your right-handed outfield bat going forward. And I just wonder, you only have, you know, 26 spots on the roster. 13 of them are going to be pitchers. So you can't keep everybody. And I just wonder if it's going to come down to Romy or Ref Snyder.
And I mean, keep in mind too, that at least after this year, Tyler O'Neill is probably gone. So that's a righty bat that you'll be losing. Abreu should be playing full-time in right field. So your outfield full-time should be Abreu, Rafaela, Duran. Yoshida's your DH. Trevor Story's back at shortstop. But again, as I always say, when people bring up Trevor Story, you need insurance for him. So, because he'll probably get hurt again, knowing him. And I know Ref Snyder's not an infielder necessarily, but Romy is. So there's a spot for Ref Snyder to be your fourth outfielder, Romy to be your backup middle infielder.
One other curveball here. Vaughn Grissom, I don't think it's inconceivable that he won't see outfield time eventually. But probably not right out of the gates because you're definitely not going to see Meyer. But he's coming up. Let's see. What's the decision day for him? Today's August 7th. So they have to decide by Friday, I think, if they're going to call him up. Well, they have to activate him, I think, either way. But will he come up to the big club or, you know, he can be optioned. So I don't know if I want to mess with that platoon, the Romy Hamilton thing. If they're serious about making the playoffs, I don't want Vaughn Grissom anywhere near this roster for as long as we're in the race.
Well, they have a little bit of time with O'Neill on the IL now, and they called up Valdez for now, but they could always option him back down, or it, you know, Valdez is here to stay. And Grissom's going to take his spot down in Worcester, and that's what they do. But O'Neill going on the IL gives them a little flexibility if they do want to call Grissom up, but I don't think they're going to right away.
And let's just say we're in it, and let's say we're tied for the third wild card on September 15th, and you got Trevor Story back, and you have Vaughn Grissom back. That's a buzzkill, I think, for this lineup. Story would be great defensively. We haven't had as many defensive woes anyway. And I don't know. I wouldn't mess with it.
It's they're in such a tough spot because, like you mentioned, if they get Story back somehow and they get Grissom back, and then you've got Tristan Casas coming back, you've got three guys coming back that are trying to figure out their timing again at the big league level while you're chasing a wild card, and you're going to have to take guys out of the lineup like Dom Smith, like Romy, like Ref Snyder, who have helped you win games down the stretch just because these three guys, you know, are the cemented starters. But what else are they going to do? If Trevor Story is ready to go, you're not going to, you know, keep him in the minors. You can't. You're not going to bench him. If Tristan Casas is ready to go, he's certainly going to talk out his ass as much as he can until he gets his first base spot back. So you can't, you know, keep him down in AAA. So they are in kind of a weird spot where all those injuries happen. We thought, oh man, this is a real drag. But now they're winning games without those guys, and you're hearing whispers of them coming back, and you're sort of going, why don't you stay away a little bit longer? Like, we don't need you back right away, you know, especially if you're still figuring out your timing and everything. So
the strikeouts are going to be bad. No power from Grissom. This team is, the offense has saved the day all season long, basically. So we'll see.
Yep. So one thing I want to add about the roster spot problem, if we just can get to September 1st, we do add two more roster spots, so we get the 28 spots.
Oh, true. That is true.
So I don't think, if you can push Vaughn Grissom off as long as possible, I don't think he deserves a spot in the majors unless he's batting like 600 on his rehab assignment. Like, I don't want him playing over anybody at the moment. Tristan Casas, obviously, he's going to start. You can decide what you want to do with Dom Smith, if you want to DFA him or try to keep him on the roster until the first. You know, he's kind of redundant at this point. If Casas is going to play, if he's healthy. So,
which is crazy, though, because Smith is by far your best right-handed bat at the moment.
I mean, he's been hitting well, but if Casas can get hot in the last month, he's just a way better player. He's got way more upside, and you can't keep him in the lineup. But I don't want a DFA Dom Smith at this point. There's no reason to.
Yeah, and keep in mind that, as Nick mentioned, Smith is redundant with Casas coming back, because Smith's a lefty. So, I mean, he's, you know, having two lefty first basemen, it's kind of tough at that point, especially with Romy, with Ref Snyder, you know, if Grissom's going to come back. And keep in mind with Vaughn Grissom, too, like, I agree with Nick, push him off as long as possible, but, you know, he's got the Casas problem. He's got the diarrhea of the mouth problem. So he'll start hitting again in his rehab assignment, and then someone will interview him, and he'll say something stupid, and he'll put pressure on the club to call him back up. It's, you know, that whole thing might become a little bit of a mess.
Casas, by the way, tonight, so Wednesday for the listening audience, 2-for-6. And he's hitting .304 in the 4 or 5 games he started. So not really showing any ill effects down there. And since we brought him up, Vaughn Grissom was 1-for-5 with a ribby. Was that a home run? Let's see. No home run. Nobody hit home runs tonight. But yeah, and Grissom's hitting .259, so not terrible, but that's against, you know, AAA guys. We're facing some tough pitching staffs here, so we'll see.
Yep, yeah, for sure. A lot of decisions to be made down the road, but there is one guy who I think is earning his spot to stay right where he is, surprisingly. And Terry, I know it's going to pain you a little bit, but who do we got coming in at number one in our top five?
I wish I could say the term that he is, you know, for the roster, but we're going to go with Masataka Yoshida. If Jeremy listens to this episode, he's going to be, you know, beaming right now that I got stuck doing Yoshida. But by far your best offensive hitter. I said nobody else had more than 3 hits in the series. Yoshida had 8, was 8-for-14. Is Lugo a lefty? I don't think he is.
No, he's a righty.
Okay. I thought Yoshida had to face a lefty because we just didn't have another option somewhere. That could have been the tail end of the previous series. But again, he was 4-for-5 in game 1 against Brady Singer. Had a big home run in game 2, and 2-for-4 in the finale. So not only did he get a hit in every game, he had multiple hits in every game. And the dude has just been absolutely lights out, really. I probably should have had his numbers pulled up. I can do it right here, actually. Ever since it seems like the start of July, he's just been on fire. In the last 30 games, hitting .330 with a .403 on base. Driven in 24 runs in the last 30 games. So he's not doing a ton against lefties. I mean, he's basically a platoon DH. I don't know if Alex Cora will tinker with that a little bit more. I wanted to bring him up a minute ago, but I didn't want to spoil who is number one. But when you have Casas coming back, I mean, he's a lefty. Dom Smith's a lefty. So who do you platoon him with? Like, there's not even a perfect platoon as you're getting these guys back. So I don't know, but he's just been – he's on that run right now that he was on the first couple of months of last season when he – I want to say the first two or three weeks he was pretty quiet and then just went on an absolute tear. And the Bluminati was, you know, roaring because – they were getting the WBC Yoshida that that they saw. And then he went away for the rest of the season. So I don't know how long this is going to last, but he's been a big part of the last three or four series and putting up W's.
Nick.
Yeah, I would be totally fine if, like how he said, the platoon, if Rob Refsnyder or Tyler O'Neill could just, there's a lefty, just don't even have Yoshida in the lineup. But he did have two hits against Cole Reagan's tonight, so he's getting better at that part of the game. And I've criticized Yoshida so many times. I don't think he fits the team or whatever. But he's kind of carried this offense the last three or four weeks here. He's been like one of the top two or three hitters besides Devers and Duran. So I will give him some credit there. Still in the offseason, I'd still rather replace him with a right-handed hitter. But if he can do this for a longer stretch. I know he goes through some hot, some cold streaks. If he can get a little bit more consistent, he might be a decent everyday player. I know they're still terrified to play him in the outfield. He's only played one inning out there. I thought maybe with Tyler O'Neill injury, he might play there tonight, but that didn't happen. So we'll see if in the next two or three days before O'Neill comes back, if they even try him out there again. I really doubt it, but who knows?
I mean, I would at least play him in the field at Fenway and just stick him in left. I mean, that's a pretty safe left field. If Manny and Hanley Ramirez can play left field, I'm sure Masataka Yoshida can do it. So I would at least try it just to give some guys that DH spot every now and then. Yeah, he's been on a tear. It's been ridiculous. And, you know, all the numbers kind of match up to it. But the thing is, when you watch him, even his outs are louder than they were, you know, in the first half. And this is before the thumb injury, but he's not rolling the ball over as much, you know, and now he's more making solid contact. It's line drives everywhere. He's starting to hit the ball out of the park a little bit more, and he's never going to be a big power hitter. He's always going to be like Andrew Benintendi power, 10 to 15 home runs tops, but that's okay because he hits the ball hard and he hits well when runners are on base, and that's huge. So it's been really encouraging to see. I do hope that it lasts throughout the rest of the year. I hope that September doesn't come around and he decides to start rolling the ball over again and just becomes a zero, because then it's going to be hard to bench him. And then it's going to be a whole saga again of why is Yoshida getting 4 days off? And I don't want to deal with that again. I just want him to be in there, keep hitting, keep raising that batting average up, keep driving in runs. Because again, we talk about it all the time. It can't be Duran and Devers every single night. It's got to be the whole lineup. They've all got to contribute. So, with Yoshida playing like this, especially with the O'Neill injury right now, you know, that's big. The way that he's been playing the second half has been huge.
So you guys kind of touched on something that I was going to circle back to. Whether or not they should play him in the outfield. And I would say, yeah, I would mess with that. I would absolutely mess with that because he's never going to be a fit on this team going forward. He's always going to be a human logjam where you can't utilize DH the way you want. You know, you want to try to get more righties in the lineup. And it's so that's one of the major hurdles. And if he can sustain this, or even 70% of this, you'll still take that. And then you start him in the field. Your chances of moving him this winter and moving, I don't know if you can move all the money with him, but most of the money, I'd say 75% of the money, that's your best chance. That's absolutely your best chance to do it. Now, it's hard because you're in a dogfight right now for that third wild card spot, and your starting pitching isn't trending the right way. I mean, they're getting slapped around a lot, so that means your fielders are busy. But man, you're at $154 million on the books this winter. That's a lot of money to play with. You move that contract, let's say he's owed $18 a year for the next 3 years. Let's say, you know, you get the other team to cover $12 million of it. You're down to close to $140 on the books. So, and you solve a lot of problems. You can use the DH spot to kind of rest guys. You know, Tristan Casas could DH for a little while. If Romy's a guy you keep, he could see some time at first base. So, I don't know. I just wonder, going back to last year, if he didn't completely fall off the face of the earth offensively in that second half, he's probably playing a lot more outfield, I would say.
Yeah, I think part of the reason they're afraid to put him out there is because last year, and we talked about it, is that I think a lot of people speculated that he fell off in the second half because of fatigue, because he wasn't used to the American MLB schedule. He wasn't used to, you know, the amount of games that we play and sort of the length of the season. And he sort of, you know, wore down in the second half. So I think that's why going into this year, all you heard was, well, he's going to be a DH. That's it. If he's going to play, he's going to be a DH, because they don't want him to break down. They don't want to start playing him in the field. And then all of a sudden, you know, he comes to Alex Cora and says, you know what? I need like 2 days off. My legs hurt. Like, I think that's what Cora is worried about, because, you know, Cora has changed in that regard, that he used to give guys days off when they didn't need it. You know, the famous one was Xander Bogaerts, who would, you know, go 4-for-4 with two homers, and then Cora would rest him the next day and we'd lose 6-0. And he's like, oh, it's just a maintenance day. You know, and it's like Bogaerts never needed it. Now this year he's letting Duran do this Iron Man thing. And I think he looks at Yoshida and he's like, kind of thinks Yoshida's a little soft. He's like, if I start playing that guy in the field, he's going to start complaining about ailments, and he's going to go 0-for-12, and he's going to say that he's fatigued. So it's tough, because I know Yoshida wants to play the field. I know those quotes came out earlier. It's sort of like the JD Martinez thing all over again, where it's like the guy wants to play the field and everyone around him's like, I don't know, dude. I don't think we want that. But I would play around with it. Maybe one day in the field, one day back at DH, something like that. But I'm not afraid of sticking him in left field, at least at Fenway Park, to start. I don't think there's any harm putting him out there. And if it gives guys a little bit of a break here, you know, especially we're into the dog days of summer with the last 2 months of the season remaining, I would try it, especially if he wants to do it. If the player's saying that he wants to be out in the field, then okay, give him the shot. And if he goes out in the field and goes 0-for-16, then you sort of go, all right, back to DH you go. But I'd give it a shot at least. So we'll see what they decide to do. Obviously, a lot of moving parts, you know, with all the injuries and guys on rehab assignments coming back and whatnot. So we'll see what they decide to do. But, you know, a lot of decisions to be made. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. Keep an eye out for another episode of Clown Takes coming your way on Friday. And we will also have our series prediction show for the Astros series coming up. So big one coming up this weekend. We'll break it all down for you. Then the weekend crew will be back with you guys Monday morning. So everyone have a great weekend. We will talk to you later. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day.
Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.